I'm so glad you said that, because as you were talking about that, I thought, you know what? This is a great beer to have in the morning.
Yeah.
This is
waffle, Belgian waffles with syrup and salty, meaty bacon on the side.
Pints and Pairings is brought to you in part by We're Driving and The Beer Cave. Learn more about our sponsors at hopheadshead.com/pintsandpairings.
Hello, and welcome to Pints and Pairings. I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hophead Zen.
And I'm Jason Hendrick with Everybody's Hungry. Curtis, we have been having an excellent conversation tonight on the patio of Barrel House 101. We're featuring Kevin Rhodes, owner of Groundswell Brewing Company out of San Diego. And Kevin, I know you have other people on your team.
We do.
We're very excited to have you in person with us here, talking about not only the beers that you have to offer, but the philosophy of beer and food, which is right in our, like you said, just to strip your phrase earlier, it's in our wheelhouse. It's Pints and Pairings is all about beer and food and getting people to embrace opportunities that, one, taste great, and two, allow you to talk with friends about it. And tonight is a beautiful illustration of all that.
Right, sitting around, conversation is flowing so well. You hit on something that I want to make sure that we get back to. You talked about, you know, you're not the only one. You've got a whole bunch of people who are propping you up and moving Groundswell forward, you know, to use the term Groundswell. I mean, these people are really helping with that. Tell us, give the shout out to the people who are the important ones, and the ones who are helping to drive this the direction that we're going.
You got it. Well, to start off, we started off with a group of six of us, where Nick Franchak and I and at the time Kevin Hilgeman were doing some brewing. Since then we brought on Derek Wasok, who is trained Seibel Institute, 3 years commercial brewing.
Seibel out of Chicago.
Yes.
Okay.
And Germany. Some time in Germany. To really bring our brewery to a commercial, really viable, good commercial brewery. So that's the brew house that really kind of made it happen. I tell people I pushed the stones uphill. I made sure that we got the money and the things got paid for and that we did the things we needed to do to get open, liquor license and such. And then on the other side, the build-out side, was Jason Stankitis and Jeff Stankitis, who did just a beautiful build-out. Our tap room, it says everything about us. It's reused wood. It's concrete. It's just fits what we want to do. It's about, you know, taking care of resources as well as making good craft beer, and so everything is there. And Jeff now runs the tap room and does a great job. People love him. They come in and they look for him all the time. I mean, his shifts are always the top, you know. He always does the best.
So people have their favorites.
Absolutely. And then Jason is doing sales now and still helping us with some other build-out kind of things. And then Ray Guerrero. Ray Guerrero's on the team. He's actually my next-door neighbor, and his grandpa.
You roped him in, huh? You're like, hey.
I didn't have to rope him in. But, you know, he
like, hey, neighbor, I got some beer for you.
He is exactly why craft beer is going to triple in the next, like, 5 to 10 years. He's 21 years old. He turned 21 1 month before the day we opened. And he had some money that his grandfather had left him. He wanted to get into the brewery. He used to come over and help us homebrew. And he's never drank really cruddy beer.
That's a beautiful thing.
It is. And, you know, I heard Scott Blair from Hamilton's and Monkey Paw, the owner of Monkey Paw, say in a meeting one time that his 25-year-old customers have never drank bad beer. And that really is a telltale sign of they're never going back, because once you go craft, you never go back. And so they're moving forward. So if we can continue to get these people coming right into it, no, and that was it.
And
so,
I think what we found too,
that
Curtis,
was the last person on our team. Sorry.
No apologies necessary. Because I think what that speaks to also, and what we've seen, is that craft beer drinkers, there's a lot of brand loyalty that can occur, but also they're constantly seeking out the next great beer or the really quality themes and great places to try something new. So that speaks to a few segments ago, Kevin, when you were talking about market share and really opening
up
new opportunities for 80% of the current craft beer drinkers to try base recipes and core styles. That that constant search for a quality pint or a great glass of beer will bring you more people who, like you said, won't go back to any of the main three. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I do have to add one person to the team, and we all do this at times, but my wife, Christiane, she's helped us to do our marketing. She's been a wizard at, you know, getting the word out, and also without her giving me that nod to say, go out and do it, you know, knock them dead with beer, it wouldn't have happened.
Right. Yeah, as we both know that the spousal support, especially when it comes to beer and saying, hey, make your living off of drinking, it doesn't always...
I know.
The delivery of that message isn't always as crisp as you'd like.
Right. Well, but it's so well understood in between you and I that we have the family support to do what it is that we're doing. And so we certainly, I'm glad that we were able to get that one in, because whenever it's time for a shout out to the family,
sure,
that's supporting us, that needs to be there. Certainly.
Most definitely.
Okay, so we were getting to the white IPA.
Yes.
Kevin, tell us about the white IPA.
White IPA. It's our summer IPA. Summer gets a little bit warm. Sometimes you don't want a beer that's quite as big as a full IPA or a double IPA. And so we...
What? That's just silly.
Double IPA fan. You got to forgive him.
No, come on. Okay.
And so we, instead of doing a session IPA like other people do and drop it down to 4%, we still maintain 6.1% on this.
Thank you.
45 IBU. The malt can carry into that hoppiness. We think it's a really good, but with the wheat, about 28 to 30% wheat in it, it just lightens it up enough that... It's good summer drink. You still could drink this on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad to know that my palate was not super off. That wheat aspect really comes through in a fun kind of grassy, crisp, bready way. And it plays with the hops. What variety of hops are we using in this white IPA? Are you at liberty to say? Caught him off guard, that Curtis.
Citra and Wakatu. I do not know Wakatu.
Wakatu is a New Zealand hop. It presents kind of as maybe a little bit of peach and a little bit of citrus. We actually have a blonde on our board back in San Diego that calls our blonde the Bay of Plenty. We named it that because that's the first place that New Zealand commercially raised citrus.
Okay.
And it's got kind of a citrus note to it.
The tidbits in Pints and Pairings. I'm going to remember that.
You got to make sure to throw that up in like one of those little message smacks on the video.
It will. It'll come up, certainly. One of the best things I love about hops is, one, their bitterness.
you like to be dried out, for sure.
But the sheer breadth of flavors that can and aromas that can, from salty, minerally aspects, all the way to passion fruit coming from this little flower. And the aromas from sawdust to grapefruit. How can you...
We also see the versatility of a hop based on when in the brewing cycle you're dropping it. So, Kevin, how much flexibility are you allowing your brewers to play with that, whether it's early on in the mash in the boil kettle or if it's late for dry hopping and just aroma? How much freedom do you give your brewers?
I'm really lucky. I have two brewers that have two very distinct and great skill sets. Nick.
A German-based brewer who is...
He's Seibel Institute, but he's from Boston.
Okay.
So he has a little bit different. He's very stylistically solid.
Yeah.
And so, which is awesome, because if we want to brew a brown, we know with brown, it's in these color range. It's in, this hop range. We can do that. And then Nick, that's Derek, and then Nick came from culinary. He has a culinary management degree. He's, cooked for a living. He gets flavors, and he's really good at picking that out. So the way it starts is Nick comes up with a recipe or Derek comes up with a recipe. They talk about it. They usually get it to a place. We'll brew it that way. I don't really jump in and say, oh, don't brew it that way. Then after it comes out, we'll taste it, and we'll give our opinions. So we try to stay in communication with that. And the other guys too, Jeff, Jason, Ray, will all weigh in on this, and we'll taste it and say, this is what we're thinking. And then we'll adapt from there. And that's how the ginger saison got to where it was. It's a little bit on the bitter side, I get it, or I want more ginger. I remember all the conversations that we were having about this. And finally, we got to a point where you couldn't just chunk it up and throw it in. Mm-hmm. You had to really get it small. You need more surface area in the liquid. It needed to go in later than the boil or the end of the boil. And so we just really had to get it
now,
perfected.
Are you going full batch in your experiments, or are you doing a very small batch? Like, are you saying, we're going to brew this, and how it turns out is how it turns out. We may have to make some adjustments, but we're going to brew this as if we're putting it in the tasting room.
We have two great things going for us. The first one is people love craft beer, and even if it's different than the last one, they're still going to love it. I mean, really, people just come in to drink beer, and even if it's a little bit different, they still want to drink it, and you're going to pour it. So that's not a problem. The second one we have going for us is we have a three-barrel system. So, I mean, you know, you're talking about 4.5, 5 kegs that we get out by the time we get our final yield. It's not that much of an investment, so we don't have to worry. And I think we'll continue to do three-barrel batches even when we do bigger batches, just to make sure.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an R&D. We've seen that with Figaro Mountain here. So, you know, they've got their big one, their big system, production system in Buellton. They've got another smaller one in Santa Barbara where they do all these tests. And then if it does well there in those test markets, then let's ramp that thing up. And so, but one of the things that I love about it and your customers certainly will love is being able to try those one-off three-barrel batches and still being able to take home the growler of their white IPA or whatever it is that they know that they're going to drink tomorrow, you know, at the beach, whatever it is.
Now, I know we got a little bit more time we want to spend with Kevin, but given, again, that foodie background, I'm trying to get away from that term. I've seen that all over. The people are tired of hearing foodie.
Foodie.
But there's not anything else that's really good. That's the best thing to use. Given the culinary background, your passion for food, are you experimenting at all with, like, Randall's and taking some unique food ingredients that you can pass the beer through to impart some flavor before pouring? Are you considering any kind of aging or letting an ingredient sit on the beer just to impart something different?
We're pretty tough on saying that we want to use a lot of different ingredients to put in the beer. And it's probably a little bit is the food philosophy of some of the people there, but also wine, my wine background. Wine's never done it. And so I kind of have this thing about why do I have to put jalapenos in the beer to prove that it goes with something hot? You know, why do I have to brew a beer that has a whole bunch of certain spice in it and overwhelms the food? So we've done it very seldom. Our ginger saison, we have a mocha milk stout that we use cocoa nibs at the end of the boil, and we
so you're
use
looking
locally
at very distinct
coffee.
Uses. You're not just blatantly throwing all kinds of ingredients into your different recipes.
No.
You have a very specific use for very precise beers.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And we want it to be just lightly, you know, in there for flavor, but not overwhelming. And so we're a little bit more reserved, I should say, in that area. It doesn't mean we won't do things. If we think it's going to add to the flavor, like the piloncillo sugar, if it's going to add to the flavor and not take away what's already there, then we'll think about it, we'll talk about it, and we might
do
it.
So you don't want to enhance, you don't want to mask.
Absolutely.
I like that. That really speaks again to that foundation recipe, that core beer style, standing up on its own before you're manipulating it in any way.
While you two were talking here, I was kind of off, and I kind of caught that, but I was off on a useful tangent. I was thinking of the food that this was calling me for, and for some reason I want rye bread. I don't know. I mean, we're talking about grapefruit and pineapple and other tropical aromas, but I'm also thinking there's this looking for just maybe a tiny bit of spice, and maybe that's what it is that I'm looking for to add to it, just a little bit of spice, but then also a touch of arugula, so some nutty spiciness along
peppery.
With it. Whether it was pastrami or any, you know, sliced or anything else.
Where you're going with that, because my mind started going into a salty realm, and the pastrami with the rye, that spice and salt, I think is really cool. So we actually had two different directions spinning in our minds, because I was thinking more firm and flaky fish, accentuating those tropical citrusy notes. So I think both whether you take the left or the right fork, you're not going to go wrong with this opportunity.
Right, and just because of the wheat component with this, unless you're doing a 100% rye bread, which you're not doing. But I mean, it's going to go well with just about anything that you know, any sandwich that you're putting together with it. But I think just a tiny bit of salt and a little bit of spice along with it is going to heighten the fruitier aspects of this, the hop profile.
And we didn't get into desserts too much over the course of this flight, but this IPA I think also would lend very well to like anything with shortbread or like a lemon zest component, or even moving into the cheesecake realm with a little sour creaminess. It would kick up the herbaceousness and the hoppiness of this beer, but still, again, accentuate some of those fruity aspects you're pulling into the beer.
Yeah, you're getting a nice contradictory pairing where the sweetness balances out that hoppiness.
Exactly.
And then the fruit, the citrus, and the fruit plays off of each other.
Yeah, the graham cracker crust kind of thing,
yeah.
And then to kind of bring up that sweetness. But, you know, one of the descriptors here is lime, and so looking at maybe even going
key lime pie
right there.
you've
got that nice flaky crust underneath, and then just
sorry, I didn't mean to steal.
So a lot of times, you know, especially when it's the validation that somebody else was thinking along the same lines, we get that every once in a while. It is. And that was one of them, right?
I think also both of you brought up things that were peppery, and you get a peppery kind of note in there from the spiciness of the hops.
Mm-hmm.
Like the pastrami usually carries some good pepper on the outside.
Right.
Sure.
You know, so I think that works too.
And again, just speaking to what we've heard from you, Kevin, about the philosophy of the brewery and the core values you're adding to the recipes and the beer making, all these are going to be great food beers, as we expected. But just again, going back to your term validation, now that we've drank them in person with you and we've talked about it, I don't think you're going to go wrong with too many of the food opportunities out there. These are very approachable and they're very versatile.
Thank you.
Well, and one of the things that we talk about off and on too is that we're drinking beer and we're eating food. And if it doesn't go well together, you're still eating a really good whatever, and you're still drinking a really good beer. So, I mean, life could be worse, couldn't it?
Life could be worse.
Of course
it could.
So just enjoy the two separately as you, you know, just look forward to the next time you get to put something else with it, I guess.
I think that's an area where beer is way, way ahead of the wine world is that we get it. If you're drinking your favorite beer and you're eating your favorite food, it's a happy moment.
Right, it is.
Wine was snobby for so long, and now finally you're hearing wine people say, you know, if you drink what you love and you eat what you love, you're going to be happy and we're okay with that. But they're only okay with that. We know it's really happiness.
Sure. Right.
Well, and you hit on something. I hear a lot more wine people say those kinds of things, and I see a lot more wine producers having a more carefree attitude about it too, you know, and
definitely
what the Ventura wineries certainly do, and even starting to work up Santa Barbara and towards Paso, you know, you get to the places where, hey, drink what you like and eat what you like, and don't even, you know, kind of like
Absolutely.
What we do. We might be able to help you bring that meal and that beverage to a new level, but really, you're still eating drinking two things that are delicious in themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think it's a great place to wrap up for this segment. We got a little more time, Kevin. We're going to secure you for a little longer than expected because...
No worries.
As we wrap up, I want to grab 10 or 15 minutes to talk about something you referenced earlier, that community impact, and specifically as it relates to your water initiative program. I mean, we talk about brewing and beer making. It takes a lot of water.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Being in California, we know we've got some terrible water conditions right now. So I want to touch on that, but also the future of Groundswell and how people can get a hold of you. So stay tuned. We've got another segment coming up. If it's your first segment, as Curtis always tells you, go back into the archives, look for the Groundswell flight, whether it's the brown, the ginger saison, or the white IPA that we just finished, but also the intro show that gives you some great history on how Groundswell came to be. So stay tuned.
As always, I'll remind everyone to eat, drink, and be happy.
We'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.
Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor from Hophead Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick from Everybody's Hungry. Whether it's a night out with friends or listening to the Pints and Pairings show, getting home safe requires some planning. We trust our vehicles and ride home to Weird Driving, based in Oxnard, California.
Find out more about this designated driving service at weredriving.com. That's W-E-R-E driving.com. If you're not in SoCal, find a trusted DD service in your area, and we'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.